Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
And a good morning to you all. Beautiful sunny day here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on February 20th. And it's a Tuesday. So, Susan, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm fine, too.
Good.
I sort of thought we could start today with, I have a bunch of stuff about presidents. You know, and it reminds me, it was what, President's Day yesterday?
Yes, it was, because I, you know, knew it was, but I still tried to go to the post office.
I know. So our,
and I never go to the post office, but on President's Day, I needed to.
You tried to go. Are they the only ones who have the day off? Does anyone celebrate that? I mean, I'm serious. I don't know.
I think banks close. The stock market's off.
Okay. So there you go. So anyway, President's Day. I came upon, Robert Reich came up with a perfect, because I was complaining to a friend yesterday about it is the most useless holiday, President's Day. I mean, there are so many other, it's just ridiculous. And then Reich put this on Twitter. How about we nix President's Day and make Election Day a national holiday?
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Nobody loses a holiday. We all gain one, and I'm sure all presidents would think it a fine idea.
Well, most would think it a fine idea.
Most. Well, yeah. I think most. Because we're thinking only Republicans don't think voting is good, but that's relatively recent, isn't it?
That's relatively recent, but I'm just, you know, I mean Trump wouldn't want to give away the honorific day for himself.
No, certainly not. Not that any of us were celebrating him.
Him, yesterday. the number 50 on the presidential.
Or
40, whatever it is.
He was 50.
Yeah.
Although I think, you know, they break it down in different ways. This is the historian poll. It's ridiculous, that poll. I mean, it's not the
it's not the like top. It's a scientific poll. They just ask.
They ask, and the thing is, the presidents move up and down in the course of a few years. So Reagan used to be way up at the top. Now he's moved much further down, not a lot, but, you know, up and down and up and down they go. Obama's going up and came up, which I find strange. And
how can he come up? I would have thought he was pretty far up anyway.
No, he wasn't that far up. He's now in the top 10, I think. I don't
okay.
know. It's ridiculous. The whole thing's right. ridiculous. Bill Clinton is number 10.
Ah, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's absurd.
Well, it's being awfully forgiving.
Well, it's also the ones that we knew, you know, I mean, loom larger. I mean, it's stupid. It's just one
well,
of those.
Well, sure. I'm not an expert on a whole range of presidents, mostly
yeah,
the ones
exactly.
that I didn't, you know.
Exactly right. I mean, the presidents of 150 years ago are, you know, not faring as well as perhaps they should because nobody even remembers them, even the historians. But here's this wonderful thing I came across. Harry Truman. I'm not sure where he was on the list. Harry Truman said this, and it shows how little has changed, how we remain the same. This is Harry S. Truman. Republicans approve of the American farmer, but they are willing to help him go broke. They stand four square for the American home, but not for housing. They are strong for labor, but they are stronger for restricting labor's rights. They favor minimum wage. The smaller, the better. They endorse educational opportunity for all, but they won't spend money for teachers or for schools. They think modern medical care and hospitals are fine for people who can afford them. They consider electrical power a great blessing, but only when the private owner power companies get their rake off. They think America's standard of living is a fine thing, so long as it doesn't spread to all the people.
That yeah, true. The more things okay. change.
Exactly. Just so we should know that not much has changed in terms of what Republicans stand for and what Democrats have stood for. Let me see. This was in a book review that I read. And the title of the book is Are You Prepared for the Storm of Lovemaking? What?
No, I am not.
Yeah, right. Well,
I'm buying
a
gun.
It turns out that comes from a letter written by a United States president to his love. Are you prepared for the storm of lovemaking? I'm not even clear who said it.
Is this more of the Adams family?
No, it wouldn't have been. Oh, but they listen, here's one that comes from this review.
Well, I'm just trying to think of letter writing, famously letter writing spouses, right?
Right. But here are the little ones that I've gleaned that I think will be interesting. Dolly Madison. Okay.
Yeah.
And
the hostess with the mostest. Yeah.
Yeah, listen to this. It's beyond belief. Dolly Madison's habit late in life was hefting her elderly husband onto her back and romping around the room with him, quote, whenever she particularly wished to impress him with a due sense of man's inferiority.
You go, Dolly.
I knew you'd like that, Susan, but what? Dolly Madison?
Well, it's not quite the image I had of that little petite woman in the cinched waist and the big hoop skirts. But I can add a president on her back, and when her galloping around whooping it up, I can. It just cracks me up.
Isn't that amazing? I so loved it. Okay, here's another.
Well, and they each other, obviously. You know, I mean, it's just
yeah.
Cute.
It was a good love.
It was a party trick, right?
And Harry Truman. Speaking of Harry Truman, he wrote to Beth that I've always thought that the best man in the world is hardly good enough for any woman.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Susan. I don't know if any of that is true. But I
applaud the sentiment.
Yeah, okay. And then, of course, you got the one who was the known coxman was Warren G. Harding, right?
Well, one of them. I was going, which one of them are you talking about when you said that?
Well, but if it – so – one of the letters, I don't know where this letter came from because he wouldn't have written it, but if it's sex you're looking for, Warren G. Harding will meet your expectations. Somebody wrote it. So here it is. It says that Harding, obviously the raciest stuff in the book, because most of it are words from the love letters between the presidents and their mistresses and spouses and girlfriends. Here's Harding to his mistress. I hurt with the insatiate longing until I feel that there will never be any relief, until I take a long, deep, wild draft on your lips and then bury my face on your pillowing breasts. Warren G. Harding to his mistress, Carrie Phillips. And it turns out that Carrie Phillips and the president had names for their genitals.
Well, of course they did. Every right-thinking couple does.
Well, okay. His was Barry, and hers was Mrs. Pooterson.
As in, can Jerry come and visit Mrs. Pooterson?
Mrs. Pooterson, right?
How charmingly quaint.
I love it. Okay, one more. One more. Again, the book, if you're interested, is called Are You Prepared for the Storm of Love Making?
Was that also Warren G?
You know, I'm not sure. It's in here somewhere, but I didn't
come across it yet. No. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking for it and I'm not coming up. Okay. Oh God, you won't believe who it's from.
Oh no. Is it Nixon?
No. Oh, God. That reminds me of, like, who was it? It was Sam.
This is like a bad party game.
I know. I was like, okay, you have to answer. Who would you rather have sex with? You know, and there'd be like two. Sorry. Oh, my God. Okay. Homer Simpson or I mean,
right.
Oh man. Okay. So,
restate the question. So when you tell us who, we'll know what we're talking about.
Okay. So this was written by a man who was the president of the United States. Maybe before he was, I don't know. Are you prepared for the storm of lovemaking? All right. That was written by one of your hats. Because it just doesn't seem like something he'd say. Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow?
Woodrow? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so there it is. Now, I'm going to just read the review for this little story, because rather than paraphrasing. One day in 1904, Grace Goodhue looked out the window. In the building across the street, she saw a man shaving while wearing long underwear and a derby hat to keep his hair out of his eyes.
What?
Everybody got the picture?
Yeah, it's what I'm saying. It looks like I'm picturing W.C. Fields over there, but no.
She sees a man shaving while wearing long underwear and a derby hat to keep his hair out of his eyes. She laughed so loud that he heard her. He turned and saw her. And so to apologize, she sent him a potted plant. They began trading cheerful letters back and forth across the street nearly every day. In one, he thanks her for sharing some candy with him. In another, he invites her on a sleigh ride. In a third, he makes an apology that isn't an apology at all. This is the apology. I really didn't mean to call on you last night. But when I saw you sitting in the window, I couldn't help it. If you don't want to tempt me, you best keep out of sight.
These guys were quite wooers.
That particular little wooer, shaving in his derby hat and long underwear, was Calvin Coolidge.
Well, of course it was Calvin.
bad and great.
And was did she become Mrs. Calvin Coolidge?
Yes, she did. She was his wife.
This was a cute meet.
Yes. How adorable is that?
Just saying.
So, Jerry and Mrs. Pooterson.
Okay. There was that. I knew that would be better than anything. So, news.
Yes.
I have one more presidential thing. And this was out in the Washington Post yesterday, and it's just the most extraordinary story of how Abraham Lincoln pardoned Biden's great-great-grandfather.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
What a story. I mean, come on.
What a cute story.
Abraham Lincoln got Biden's great-great-grandfather out of a horrible...
out of the Civil War Guantanamo.
Yeah, exactly. So the story, if those of you didn't hear it, the guy, the great-great-grandfather is a guy named Moses Robinette. And Robinette is...
That is Biden's middle name.
Yeah, yeah. And he was an employee of the Union Army. He was
he was a veterinarian technician, which because they said so.
He kept the horses and everybody. Right, even though he had no veterinary training, but that's what he did. And he got in a fight. He had been, so he was in his 40s at the time, and he had been a successful hotel owner in Virginia. But he was in the part of Virginia that seceded to become West Virginia, and all hell was breaking loose pre-Civil War. And his hotel and everything else ended up as early battlegrounds because there was a railroad that went through him. And anyway, his wife died. His hotel ended up destroyed. And he was left with some young children, and he ran back to sort of the eastern part of Virginia, and then was hired as this veterinary, whatever, in 62 or 63. And by all accounts, people really liked him. He actually sounds like Biden.
Right. He was just a hail fellow, well met, a jolly guy.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. They said witnesses at his trial described him as full of fun, always lively and joking. And what happened is he'd been drinking, and the other guy started the fight. Some other guy named Beverly, named somebody or other, heard Robinette say something about him to the female cook. And he rushed over and demanded an explanation, and tempers flared, it says, expletives followed, and Robinette drew his pocket knife. After a brief scuffle, Robinette was arrested for attempted murder. What you laughing? Poor guy. Anyway, at the trial.
Right, because I'm imagining a little Swiss Army knife. And even according to the reports at the time, he just had little cuts on him. I know.
So it's amazing that, I don't know, he must have had one hell of a bad lawyer. In closing, during his trial, because they had the trial transcript, Robinette said, "Whatever I have done was done in self-defense. And I had no malice towards Mr. Alexander before or since. He grabbed me and possibly might have injured me seriously had I not resorted to the means that I did," which seems perfectly reasonable. Also, we later learned that the guy
who suffered the stab wound was much bigger than Robinette. So he could have, you know, felt he needed a little aid. Anyway, the military judges were a bunch of curmudgeons and unanimously found him guilty on all counts except attempt to kill. And he was sentenced to 2 years at hard labor and sent off. Meanwhile, what happened to his kids? Because he's got young children.
Well, they were in with family in Maryland. You're missing a part of the thing.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So off he goes to this hellhole. And when he
in Florida
gets there, in Florida, the and three Army officers who were there in positions of, you know, authority at the prison, not as prisoners, they knew him. They recognized him. And they are the ones who petitioned the president, Abraham Lincoln, to pardon him. And they wrote that they thought that the sentence was unduly harsh because he was merely defending himself and cutting with a penknife a man much his superior in strength and size, all under the impulse of the excitement of the moment. And they went on to talk about his character, saying that from the outbreak of the war, Mr. Robinette has been an ardent and influential man in opposing traitors and their schemes to destroy our government. And it ended thusly. Think of his motherless daughters and sons. We are praying for your interposition in behalf of the unfortunate father and distressed family of loved children, Union daughters and Union sons. It worked.
Yep. Out he got.
He got himself out. He really spent very little time there. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, if there's a moral to the story, it's that there's no harm in being a good guy and making friends. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it causes people to stand up for you when they see an injustice perpetrated against
right.
you. I mean, you know.
Right.
You reap what you sow if life works the way it should.
Yeah. So he went back to his family in Maryland. And he, after the war, took up farming and ended up dying in 1903 at his daughter's home. And his obituary eulogized him as a man of education and gentlemanly attainments. No mention was made of his.
Well, that was Abraham Lincoln. That slate clean. I mean, and it wouldn't become, you know, a mark of honor that Abraham Lincoln pardoned you until, 100 years later. So,
but I just love it. That story's so wonderful. Love it.
Well, you know, it's the stories that, you know, people who are lucky enough to be able to actually trace their family roots. Find. Yeah. It's why shows like Finding Your Roots are so much fun to watch, because even if it's not your story, it's somebody's wonderful, amazing, unexpected story. And historical fiction has always been my favorite, so why wouldn't historical nonfiction be even better?
Yeah, it is. It's fun to see where people come from.
And the unexpected twists and turns. Well, it's like when the detective contacted us because our erstwhile great-grandfather had a child that we didn't know about, several of them, that died intestate.
Well, he was, to make that clear, he was married. He'd lost his first wife.
And right.
He was married
and had a whole other family, but we knew nothing about him.
We did not know about that.
No, we didn't know about them.
Turned out to be but they were relatives of ours through him. And so when one of them died, they went looking for heirs and they found us.
Right.
Much to our surprise. How much did we get?
We got like, we split like a half of a, you know, that generation's cousin share. I think it was like $3,000 or $4,000 a piece.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah. From some, yeah, person we never,
never met. And that, but, you know, but it opened up a whole bunch of information that we also didn't know about our family. Yeah.
Well, it turns out we were told a bunch of hooey. Families do this. They make up a narrative that they like. And in the narrative that my father, our father, was told by his father, left out a whole bunch of stuff. A whole bunch of stuff. And I'm still confused because I always felt that there was a great estrangement between our grandfather and his
father. I think there was. I think you're correct.
Yes, but then we find out later, wasn't it our nephew?
That there was a meeting in the 30s between our grandfather and our great-grandfather.
He came to Green Bay and was visiting his son as an adult in Green Bay. And then, in fact, he had come to the United States after our grandfather.
And settled in Chicago.
So we don't even have a clue.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, people don't know what we're talking about. According to the story that we know, our grandfather's mother died. His father remarried, and the second wife, apparently, from what we were told, didn't want to raise the four children from the first marriage, and they were all sent to the United States. And our grandfather was like 11 or 12 at the time. And they made their way parentless through the United States. Our grandfather came out okay, but, you know, I always grew up with a great sense of injustice on his behalf, thinking myself when I was 12, well, what if I found myself in the middle of a foreign country being told to take care of yourself, kid. Nice knowing you. And that's what he did.
But we still don't. I don't know. There's so much we don't know.
So we don't know. But it was very interesting to find out that here was this father living in Chicago with a lot of his other children living within a mile and a half, probably, of where he lived, also living in Chicago.
And then one of them died, and I got $3,000.
Yeah, cool. But anyway, the detective who found us, I said, oh, this is so cool. We don't even care about the money, but you're giving us all of this information. Then I told her what I knew, and she says, this is why I love doing this. These stories are just so remarkable.
Right, right. God. Well, you know, I mean, whatever. The thing also, though, about that finding your roots is when people hear something about, you know, the indomitability of some ancestor, they then say,
oh, that's where I got it from.
Yeah, well, that's where I got it from. And I'm thinking, that is such bull.
Yeah.
Because when they find out their ancestors were slave owners, they don't say, oh, that's where I got
it from.
So they don't. Ben Affleck,
when he found out he was descended from slave owners, refused to let them put it in the show.
I know. He later apologized.
Well, it didn't work because it got out.
It didn't go. It got out even more.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of the people end up finding out.
The correct answer is the way I have seen people graciously handle it all along of, oh, dear,
right.
I feared as much, you know.
Right. And the thing is, what's the ones that just kill you is the black people whose history is being done, and they end up coming face to face with a picture of their great great grandfather,
who is always the ugliest of white men,
white slave owner, right? Exactly.
They're always really rather ugly looking in the pictures. There's a picture of your great grandfather, and as they recoil,
Well, they recoil even if he were handsome. They recoil.
Yeah.
God. Okay, so, what I got here? Oh, Susan, look at
yes.
The Alabama Supreme Court.
Yes, I know. I'm trying to figure out how this works. Tell the people.
The Alabama Supreme Court has ruled that frozen embryos are people.
So, if you have frozen, say, you know, let's just say that you got, you had a few, and let's say you've got five or six embryos frozen.
Well, they always do more than
they always do more. They always do more.
Try again.
Yes. In case you want more children, in case, you know, it doesn't work, blah, 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 blah. But now, if that's true, well, they better get Social Security numbers. And you can deduct some. And heaven help. Heaven help. Well, you can deduct them for state. You can't deduct them for federal. And if someone tries, that's how it gets to the Supreme Court. But I mean, I was reading that this morning at you know, probably like 5:30 when I said, okay, I give up, and started reading. And I then spent like an hour unraveling the legal consequences. So remember when someone accidentally pulled the plug on all of those frozen eggs and all of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was a mass murder.
That's mass murder.
Yeah, it is. It's a mass murder.
And by the way, some of those were, you know, don't you think that the people who those belong to don't feel that way about it, to be clear? But I'm not sure they'd, you know, just shame on them.
Listen to what the Supreme Court, Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice wrote. Human life cannot be wrongfully destroyed without incurring the wrath of a holy God.
Oh, yeah.
Who views the destruction of his image as an affront to himself.
Yes.
Even before birth, all human beings bear the image of God, and their lives cannot be destroyed without effacing his glory. What the hell is that doing in a Supreme Court decision? It's this guy's religious belief. It has nothing to do with the law. Am I correct?
You are correct. Separation of law and state.
God!
I mean, of religion and state, or whatever it is. But, yes,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. You know, and the same thing with, you know, those wonderful guys in the Tennessee legislature who, when someone just routinely seeks to honor the two Grammy winners from the previous week, and just basically puts it on the consent schedule, you know, because who's going to object to the honorific of, you know, congrats on your Grammy to our, the, you know, our proud Tennessee.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what? Well, let's just say that one of them is white and one of them is black, and one of those Tennessee Republican legislators took that off the consent and docket and opposed the African American nominee. You can't make this stuff up. Nah, I'm not going to vote for the black one. No consent on this. So of course the white artist said, "I'd take me off too. I don't want to be any part of this. I don't want an honor that, you know, that you wouldn't equally give to her for the same thing." You know, I mean, just appalling. This is the same guys that kicked those two black legislators off.
No, I know the Tennessee legislature is a horror show of just open
racism. Proud Jim Crow kind of racism.
It's mind blowing.
And the amount that they cut people's mics off in that place.
Dear God.
Really appalling. Yes.
staying with the law for a little bit. That'll be our heading.
Did
right
you
now.
Read that? I'm beginning to love these. I'm beginning to remember what I loved about law school and the law, reading these judges' rather magnificent opinions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know which one you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking here, I'll look it up and you can see who's calling.
Okay,
in.
we've got a caller. Hello.
I want to know where these people got educated at and then were able to qualify for a Supreme Court anywhere.
Oh, these are Harvard types.
How do you?
Oh, I don't know, but
I don't know how.
Well,
you
it could
have
well
any,
be.
How do you have any type of education and leave this shit? You know,
well,
they're human beings. You know, and I can see maybe one or two goofballs, but how many on the court said agreed with this nonsense?
I don't know.
Well,
was it a unanimous decision?
I don't know.
I mean, if you go to school and get an accounting degree, or you would think like you're going to have enough education, no matter what your profession is, that you're not going to be stupid enough to think that. And I must be living Pollyanna world.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, what I was looking up is because I can't keep all the judges straight. Judge Merchan, who is the judge that's overseeing the Bragg criminal fraud case in New York, which is about to start,
right,
wrote
right.
this, and it's just perfect. Whether it comes to American business or constitutional democracy, individuals who flamboyantly and persistently flaunt the rules of a system must be deterred for that system to endure. That principle underlies the gravity of the forthcoming case in Manhattan and the cases elsewhere against Mr. Trump. And I just think that's perfect. All, and it's what everybody has to remember, including that Alabama judge, that there is such a thing as rule of law.
Wait a minute, Susan, I'm sorry. Did that say flout or you said flaunt?
Well, it says flaunt.
It says flaunt?
Uh-huh. It says flaunt, F-L-A-U-N-T.
A-U-N-T. Well, that is an incorrect word, and it makes no sense there.
Yes, I know.
He meant flout.
Flout.
That drives
me
crazy.
I know.
So much for his education. God dang it.
Well, but don't get upset about that one, dude, and not realize the point, which is that when every time these guys just decide to go off their own way and not, you know, bend to the rule of law, I don't understand how all these authoritarians don't believe in rules.
Well, because they don't make them. They only believe in the rules they make. I mean, you know that.
Yes,
they
I know.
They believe in rules.
Yes, I understand that. But it's their followers that kill me. Okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
Here's a question for both of you. You're talking about DNA, DNA testing and that type of thing, and Biden and Ben Affleck and everything. I have a large family, and one of my brother-in-laws really got into family trees back in the 80s. So, I mean, it's a real passion for him. So he was, before the internet, he was driving to town, looking at birth certificates, death certificates. I mean, he did actually a wonderful job of what he did.
Wow.
Well, the only problem was he wrote a little book about it, and my oldest sister wasn't too happy because it included her second of four husbands, and they're only married for 6 months.
Well, he was telling the truth.
He had
a different
historians
narrative.
Don't judge, they just report.
Well, so here's the thing. So since her husband number two in the middle of husband number three, she became a fundamentalist, born again Christian, and she's really embarrassed by her four marriages. And so she says, what's the point? Nobody really knows, especially all the nieces and nephews, they don't know about husband number two. Why is he printing this? And I have to admit, it's like, how do you, after a couple of drinks, I remember Albert, and I'll talk about him a little bit. And it's just like, so I put my foot in my mouth, but it's like, so anyway, so that was number one. And the second thing was my mom's youngest sister died a couple of years ago. And then like a year after that, you know, all the DNA testing the family did, he says, you know, Aunt so-and-so was not your father's daughter.
Oh, God.
At a family get-together.
I know. Anybody that thinks that secrets will be kept needs to...
Well,
they who wanted the secret kept didn't keep the secret. Why should anybody else?
Well, that floored everyone. And the only reason we knew about it was because of DNA testing. And I'm sure if my aunt knew about it, she would have never submitted to it.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things that goes back 70 years. And it kind of freaked out her only child and actually all of us kids in my family. So it was.
Well, that's all people have been warning for a long time. That's the downside. Don't assume that you aren't going to find out stuff you don't.
Oh, yeah.
Want to know.
Families. Yeah, that has happened. Yeah, a lot. All right.
It just comes down to one of those things. Like, do you really have to let everybody know everything? You know, it's one thing to do the test, but like, if I had that information, I would probably just keep it under wraps. I mean, there's no reason to keep the record straight, right? It's like, what purpose? No. Okay.
I don't know.
All right. I'm curious.
Yeah. Whatever. Okay. Thank you.
Brave new world. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. So, and historians do lie, Suze. They don't, they are not truth tellers.
No,
you
of
know.
Course.
Yeah. 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 So, I think you've heard about the former Congressman Santos suing Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes, for fooling him, for using more than one name. I mean, for
pretending
to be someone who he isn't.
I think Santos has a good case. He's
no bull.
What? I've been reading it. So Kimmel, understandably, knowing Santos is doing these videos for money, you can ask him to do it. And he did a ton of them. And then Kimmel's been using them on his show. He's got a whole new segment called Will Santos Say It? Well, Santos has filed suit and said that Kimmel and the producers and Disney and ABC and anybody committed copyright infringement, which they have.
Because his business is based on making a video that you share. It doesn't tell who you can and can't share it with.
Cameo's terms of service state that videos on the platform are licensed, not sold, and that a personal license grants a recipient limited rights to use a requested video for non-commercial and non-promotional purposes. Users may not sign up also by using false identities. So, Kimmel used false identities to get these videos.
Okay, so sue him. So sue him.
So I think Santos has a. I'm just saying. I think Santos.
I'm okay. Sue him. I will give him $1. I mean, you can't. He broke the terms of the contract. I guess if there is such a contract. But how do you assess his damages?
Look, I don't know. He said, Kimmel said he was going to continue to use Santos's cameos.
Right, because he's not terribly afraid.
But then he didn't. After the attorneys for Santos sent Kimmel a cease and desist letter, and then blah, 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 blah. And no, I think.
All right. Well, if he's so noble, Kimmel did the right thing. If they send a cease and desist, it shows that, you know, that's fine. He's not being Trumpian in his response and doubling down and doing it again. It's not stupid, but I wouldn't be frightened by this case at all. Or every time.
I don't think it's a big case, but I do think Santos has a case, is what I'm saying. And he also gets to be, you know, in the
It's just, you know,
spotlight.
It's just, yes, I understand. It's hard to argue that you've been taken advantage of and fooled by someone who has just publicly taken advantage of the whole country and fooled them. So, you know, I mean.
Well, but that doesn't fit into a legal framework.
Kimmel got
a big laugh for saying, "Can you imagine I'm being sued by Santos for fraud?" You know, that's a laugh.
Yeah, but you can't commit fraud against a fraudster. Yes, you can.
Yes,
you can.
Right.
And everybody can be a victim. Absolutely. That's why I said the issue is what are the damages. Just because he's correct doesn't mean he's been harmed. And
well,
the harm,
that's for a jury.
That's for a jury or a judge, depending how it works and how to assess it. But anybody worth their salt is going to argue that there can be no damage to somebody who has already created all the damage. There's no further down to go. I mean, you know, ridiculing someone that made a fool of himself? Oh.
Okay. Just saying.
I'm just saying you're sitting on the jury. How much money are you going to give them?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to give him anything.
Exactly.
So, but I do think he's got a. I do think he's got a case.
Okay. Being right and being recompensed for it are two very different things. You know, and then there's those nice women in Georgia who were just working the polls and got awarded, you know, all those millions from Giuliani, and they won't see a penny.
No. Well, we're all learning a lot about our legal system. God knows.
We are. One of the things that we're learning is it works. And
usually.
That,
but then
and
I, but it
and
works
I,
so
these,
slowly.
Some of these judges are so good. Well, it has to work slowly. It's a cumbersome process.
But the slow part. In terms of the case you mentioned of those two women in Georgia whose lives were upended and who were terrorized and Giuliani and the judgment against him and the fact that you're saying and they won't see any of that money, that suggests that the system doesn't work very
right.
well.
I don't know that they won't see any, but they won't see the total reward. But any money he has will have to go to them.
Oh, we'll see. I mean, they could be dead and gone before that happens. So again, late night hosts. Did you see what John Oliver has done?
Yeah.
John Oliver is just cutting to the chase, and he's saying, "Hey, Clarence."
Give the Bex thing because Clarence Thomas. It turns out that all the billionaires started paying Clarence Thomas because he was threatening to resign because he was in debt and he couldn't afford to stay on the court.
That's right. That's right. So he couldn't afford.
There's the backstory.
And so then the billionaire said, "Oh, we'll keep you on the court. We need you." So that's where he gets all the, you know, all the grifting happens. And Oliver said, "Hey, how about this, Clarence? How about if I, give you $1 million? Is it for every?
A year.
a year. I will give you $1 million a year if you get off the court.
Right.
Step down immediately. The check is in the mail. You got your mill.
I'll give you $1 million for life.
For life, every year. I'll also throw in a brand new $2.5 million motor coach, outfitted with a king size bed, 4 televisions, a fireplace, yada 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 yada, all that stuff you want. And then he's got 30 days to accept
the offer.
The offer. And I mean, there's something wondrous about that. And then he also, he mocked him. He said, Where is it? Oliver mocks him. Oh, because he says, this is the perfect way to find out who your real friends actually are. And Oliver says, that's the beauty of friendship, Clarence. If they're real friends, these billionaires, they'll love you no matter what your job is. So they'll keep giving you money, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Well... You know, you gotta laugh anyway. We got a lot of this to live through. Are you gonna buy a pair of tennis shoes? Those gold tennis shoes are really nice.
God, are they ugly? I mean, the tackiness, the unbelievable, just out there grifting. It's. You can't make it up. You can't make it up. I hate to get serious at this point, but Navalny's
widow, yeah.
Widow, Yulia, her name is. I want to know her first name because all she's ever called is Navalny's widow. And it gets Yulia Navalny has said she will pick up the torch and carry it. And
I hope she does it outside Russia, which is no safer, but a little safer.
Yeah. If she she right after she made that that speech, and it was posted on YouTube, I believe, her account on Twitter, on Elon Musk's Twitter, was suspended.
Right.
Now, explain to me, how awful is this man? Why does, so what, he's now keeping her off his site?
Why are you surprised, and how can you ask that question? You know how awful he is.
But he's always trying to, he does these things, and then he apologizes and tries to rehabilitate himself. Because he's nuts.
He's got the impulse control of a 3-year-old. Who does that remind you of?
That's right. Yeah, he's like Trump in that way. Like Trump with a brain, this restless brain, and he knows no peace.
Well, and he's in trouble with the judges, too. You know, he's another one that's fighting with the courts.
Delaware
corporation law, which just cracks me up.
I love it. There's a judge there, a woman, who's
she's young, she's a 41-year-old, just who is so good at her job.
And could cost him much of his money, because hasn't she ruled that the compensation...
His compensation package that he dictated to the board that he controls was just totally out of line and not in line with corporation law and corporate best practices. And no, you can't have $365 billion a year. Sorry.
Yeah, but there are two. How long will that take to resolve? And where is that ending up? But, yeah, Why is it always these women that make these men so uncomfortable? I'm just saying.
And that is, I assume, a rhetorical question.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just women, but an awful lot of them. Awful lot of them. Bishop James, Fonnie Willis, the
right.
judge here. You got the judge in the January 6th
the
case.
The whole notion of a patriarchy is based on the fact that men are afraid of the power of women and therefore must keep us subjugated and down.
Well, how's that going for them?
Well,
so...
And then Freud makes up the whole thing about the vagina dentata, and that was the end of us.
You'll have to explain vagina dentata.
Dentata? Dentata are teeth?
Oh, the vagina is like a mouth that has teeth.
With teeth. So what? Men are afraid of putting certain things in there because it might get bitten off.
No, it's a mouth without teeth. Where do you get the teeth?
He's Freud.
Well, but Aaron, excuse me, is that the Freudian thing? I never heard it.
Yeah.
There's no teeth in a vagina. There's
no, well, of course not. It's a fear.
It's a... But... No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of the things that make feminists mad at him. But, okay.
Oh, God. Okay. So anyway, I came on this thing that I thought, I think Bill Kristol wrote it.
Not Billy Kristol, but.
No, William Kristol with
okay.
a K.
Right.
The former right winger.
Yeah, no, I know.
Who's now a never Trumper. Right. Okay. So he writes this, and boy, is he right. He says, a 1988. Presidential campaign operative that for George H.W. Bush. So remember the year 88? George H.W. is running against who? Michael Dukakis. A brilliant choice by the idiot Democrats. Michael Dukakis.
But he looks so good in a piss helmet in a tank.
It doesn't matter. Pointy, man, he had the charisma of a potato. Okay. A Bush 1988 campaign operative was quoted as saying that they were going to make the American voter believe that Willie Horton,
right.
the murderer, who was paroled under a law signed by Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, was Dukakis's running mate. That they were going to hit the Willie Horton thing so hard that no one could think of Dukakis without thinking of Willie Horton. We'll ignore for the moment the race baiting, obviously, that's going on there, right? But Kristol says, you know, there's a far better justification for Democrats doing the same thing now.
Yeah.
With Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
And so tying Trump to Putin and to Republicans to Putin, that a vote for Trump is a vote for Putin.
But it is. That's not
true.
A stretch. That's what they've been doing for the last
why.
2 months. We've been watching it. And now
but
they're on vacation, so they don't have to take any heat. Everybody should be writing each of those people and telling them to get back to work. And Gallagher,
they don't have any work to do. They don't work. They perform for their ringmaster. And we have to let people know. Putin is not beloved by Americans. Putin, understandably, is looking very scary to most Americans. And the Democrats have got to make so clear, we got to out Willie Horton, the voters, with Putin Trump.
Yeah, well,
they're
going
at the hip.
He's just—he's the Manchurian candidate.
He's a puppet And anyone who doesn't see it, I guess what scares me is how many people don't care.
They don't care.
They don't care. Wow. Well, I think that's it.
Oh, okay. That means I have to get to work.
Okay. Then you have to go to work.
Okay.
And I have to go work out.
So. Good for you.
I hate it.
I know. But good for you. Very good
I know.
For you.
Good for me.
I know. And you feel so proud of yourself when you're done. Just remember, every minute that goes by, you're almost at the end, and then you're done, and you're so proud of yourself. So it's good.
I know. I watch the clock. I just, like, watch the clock. Boy, time usually flies for me. Man, you want slow time? Work out. Okay.
Bye.
Bye, Sue. Thank you. I'll see you guys tomorrow, okay? Bye-bye.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.